As we've been journeying through the Bible together for the last several months, we have made it through the Hebrew Bible, and we more or less went in order, starting in Genesis and kind of working our way through. We did the story kind of chronologically. We varied from that a little bit. But as we start the New Testament, that was an option for us, especially with the Gospels. We could kind of go through them in order, so we could spend a few weeks on Matthew, a few weeks on Mark, then on Luke, and then on John. But that's not what we're going to do. Another option would have been to actually kind of look at the timeline of Jesus' life and kind of follow that through the different Gospels. So take a few stories from each one and kind of work our way through in kind of a chronological order of Jesus' life. But that's not what we're going to do either. Instead, we're taking some different themes from Jesus' life and spending a few weeks on those. So today, we're looking at the theme of miracles. We'll do that for 3 weeks. 3 weeks after that, we'll look at people that Jesus encountered in his life. We're calling that series Neighbors. Then we'll look at some of Jesus' teachings, Sermon on the Mount, and those kinds of things for about 3 weeks. And then we'll conclude our time in the gospel with a series we're calling Vita, which means life. So just some events from the life of Jesus that are important in his life and in our life of faith as well. So today, we turn to this topic of miracle and miracles. Now, when we think about a miracle, it's a little bit hard to define. Steffi asked the kids, and they didn't quite come up with an answer, did they? Because it really is hard to understand exactly what a miracle is. But one definition might be a happening that breaks with conventional wisdom or expectations. You expect one thing to happen. One thing is normal, it's typical, and then something different happens. And so that is what a miracle is. As people of faith, we look at miracles and they let us know that God is present in the world and in our lives and is at work. In a miracle, God transgresses some kind of boundary that we've set and expands the way that we experience and know the world. Whenever I think of miracles, the first thing outside the Bible that comes to mind is The Princess Bride, one of my favorite movies. The kind of the main character is the man in black, and he gets killed, and so his friends have to try to save him and save the day, and so they take him to a guy named Miracle Max. And Miracle Max kind of investigates the man in black to try to determine if there's anything he can do, and he says that he's only mostly dead, right? If he were all the way dead, there's nothing they could do except get the loose change out of his pockets, but he's only mostly dead. And so Miracle Max is able to work a miracle and bring him back to life. And then as the party's on their way leaving, they say, "Have fun storming the castle." And Miracle Max's wife says, "Think it'll work?" And he says, "It would take a miracle," right? He's Miracle Max, and he thinks it would take a miracle for them to succeed. But spoiler alert, they do. So anyway, it's a great movie if you haven't seen it. But miracles are these things that happen that are outside the norm, outside of what we might expect. And so Jesus performs many of these miracles, and there are lots that happen in the Gospels. Now, oftentimes we are tempted to try to explain miracles away, to try to understand them, right? But if we do, we miss the point. I think of several stories in the Old Testament where people have tried to come up with explanations of why they happened. Moses parting the Red Sea. Well, the word there can be interpreted different ways. It can be a sea of reeds, as in kind of grasses or plants. And so maybe there's just plants that are in the way, and that's what happens. Or people have come up with these explanations of different weather patterns and wind and stuff that would dry up part of the water there so that they could cross. Lots of speculation about manna, the food that the ancient Israelites ate as they wandered in the wilderness. Kind of come up with scientific explanations for that. And that's we're tempted to do that with miracles because of the age in which we live in. But if that's our default, if that's where our mind goes, if that's what we're trying to do, we really are missing the point of miracles. The point of them is not to try to find some scientific explanation of how this could have happened or why it happened or anything like that. It really is to be amazed that this thing has happened and to find meaning behind it and purpose. To look at why our expectations have been thwarted and what God is up to in our lives and in the world. And so, let's bring that spirit to this story of Jesus turning water into wine. So let me tell you the story again. Jesus and his disciples are invited to a wedding in Cana of Galilee. Now, we don't know exactly where Cana was located. There are several possible locations that archaeologists and scholars have come up with. But we know it's in Galilee, and most of the ones that they've hypothesized about are very close to Nazareth, which is the town that Jesus grew up in. And so it's very likely that this was a wedding of someone that Jesus was, his family was related to, or that he grew up with, or that he knew well, because he and his mother are both there. They're both invited to this wedding. Weddings were huge celebrations in those days. Of course, they're big celebrations now, but they would go on for a week or more, the celebration would, in those days and in that time. I picture Fiddler on the Roof. Y'all remember that musical and the wedding celebration that's there? And, you know, the whole village just kind of gathers around and celebrates together. And so I can kind of picture Jesus doing that as well. But at this wedding, the wine runs out. They've drunk all the wine. And for some reason, Jesus' mother is really concerned about this, right? Now, we don't know why. It doesn't explain why she's so concerned. It might simply be that she cares about these people and doesn't want them to experience the disgrace of running out of wine and things there. But it might be that she has some particular role at the wedding. Maybe she's in charge of some of the food or the planning or the festivities or whatever. And so maybe it's on her a little bit that the wine has run out. We don't know. There's speculation that perhaps this was a wedding of someone that she was related to. And so that's why she's kind of has this role there. We don't know. But Mary approaches Jesus and tells him that the wine has run out. And she obviously wants him to do something about it. But he has this kind of nonplussed reaction, right? He says, what difference is it to you or to me? Meh, as we might say in these days, right? But then Mary says to the servants, do whatever he tells you to do. And they do. Jesus tells them to fill up these jars with water, and they do. And then they take the water to the steward, and it's turned into wine. And so they are set for the rest of the time. So I want to reflect on three particular things about the story. The first is about simply the fact that Jesus is at a wedding. We often picture Jesus as kind of stoic and almost not human, right? We've got, you know, that image on the left there of Jesus kind of like the light shining on him. That picture was in the church that I grew up in. Anybody else have that picture in their church or their house? Yeah. Like there's this kind of stoic, nonplussed Jesus, kind of like Spock from Star Trek, right? Just unaffected by emotion, just kind of almost like a robot going through life. We sometimes picture Jesus in that way, as just kind of unaffected by anything, as almost not even human. But this story in particular, and many others, but this one in particular, reminds us that Jesus was indeed human. Jesus was at a wedding celebrating with these folks. Yeah, this is a good one. The party don't start till I walk in, right? This is Jesus. But Jesus was at a party. He was there. There was food that people were eating and wine that they were drinking. There was dancing. There was singing. There was celebrating. There was all this kind of stuff. I imagine, that it's in this kind of small place. And so Jesus knew a lot of the people. People maybe that he grew up with or that he was friends with. And so he's telling stories and he's laughing and he's telling jokes. And they're all just having a great time together as we do in our lives. Jesus is very human in this story. And I think it's important for us to remember Jesus' humanity, that he needs to eat and drink just like us, that he wants relationships and friendships just like us. Jesus, picture him at a wedding, eating and drinking and having a great time. All right, so then the next thing about this story in particular that I want to lift up is symbolism. Now, John's gospel, there's a long tradition of interpreting it on different levels. So there's kind of the main surface level that, you know, just the story itself. But then in John's gospel, there's almost always a way to interpret it on a spiritual level or an allegorical level. And so many scholars have done this over the years with this particular passage. So I want to lift up a few of the symbols. The first are the stone jars. It says, now standing there were six stone water jars for the Jewish rites of purification, each holding 20 or 30 gallons. Now it says in particular that these jars are for the Jewish rites of purification. And so if you're wanting to think about these jars symbolically, well, it might make sense that they symbolize the Jewish law and the customs and the rituals, right? John is explicit that that's what they are for these particular rites of purification, for washing your hands and other things to get ready to eat. And so perhaps they stand in, they're a symbol for the Jewish law and rituals and customs. And in the story, those jars aren't sufficient in themselves, right? The wine has run out and something needs to be done. And so perhaps part of the message that John is communicating to us is that the laws and the rituals in and of themselves aren't enough. We need the gospel of Jesus Christ to bring new life to them and to us. They need to be filled with something else, with the Spirit of Christ. And it is through that that we receive life and abundance. It's kind of contrasting gospel and law, and gospel wins out. It's what we need. There are also six of the jars, which is perhaps an important number. In Scripture, the number seven represents godliness and perfectness and completeness. The world is created in 7 days, right? And there's all kinds of other instances. And then the number six is just short of seven. And so it represents things that are not complete, things that are not full, things that are not good in some kind of ways. In the book of Revelation, the mark of the beast, the number of the beast is 666, right? Six is kind of an incomplete or a not full or perfect number. And so again, that kind of reinforces this idea that these jars they're incomplete. They're not enough. These rituals and these laws and these customs, they're not enough to give us life. No, we need the gospel, the good news of Jesus Christ. And then the other symbol in this story is the wine itself. Wine has a long tradition in the Old Testament and otherwise as a symbol. As in particular, when we think of those last days, when God reconciles everything back to God's self, the image is of a feast where there is plenty of food and plenty of wine. Hear these words from Isaiah 25:6. On this mountain, the Lord of hosts will make for all peoples a feast of rich food, a feast of well-aged wines, of rich food filled with marrow, of well-aged wines strained clear. And there's all kinds of other examples of the prophets using this kind of imagery. When God will restore all things, when God will come and be one with God's people, it will be a great feast full of food and full of wine, full of joy and full of completeness. And so we see this at this feast here, at this wedding, a symbol, a sign of what is to come in Jesus Christ. That Jesus Christ is the fulfillment of all those things and is leading us to reconciliation with God and with one another. And then the last thing I want to think about in this story is abundance. Now, when we talk about these six jars, they're big. Right? It says that they can hold 20 or 30 gallons each. And Jesus has the servants fill them all the way up to the brim. So 6 times 30 gallons is 180 gallons. 180 gallons of wine, right? What party needs that much wine? None, right? Here, put the image up there, Evan, right? It's like 3 bathtubs full of wine, right? No party needs that much wine. They're gonna run out. They don't need that much, right? All right, what's the next slide, Evan? Yeah. So what Jesus offers is not necessarily wine itself, but is abundance. Love and grace that is abundant and overflowing and more than we can ever need. That, to me, is the true message of the story. It's not about wine. It's about Jesus going above and beyond and offering us so much more. More than we could ever need. More than we can even wrap our heads around. Love and grace that is never ending. That is abundant. That is sufficient and even more than that. It is all that we need. Jesus encounters this simple situation. They've run out of wine at this wedding. Maybe they need a few more bottles just to make it through, but instead, 180 gallons of wine, the best wine, better than they had before, right? That is who God is through Jesus Christ, offering us more than we need, meeting us in our humble estate, and offering us abundant love and abundant grace. And so, friends, as we think on this story, as we ponder it for the week, I invite us to do three things. The first is to trust, just as Mary and the servants trusted Jesus. To put our faith and trust in Jesus Christ, to know that he will provide. Second is to know that Jesus joins us in this life and knows what it means to be human, joins us in our joys, our celebrations, and in our pain and in our suffering. And then finally, to know that in Jesus Christ we have all that we will ever need. Love that is overflowing, grace that is abundant, peace and joy in full measure. Thanks be to God. Amen.